No price matters. Chevy, find new roads.
Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility presents the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, going in-depth with the most interesting innovators, changemakers, business leaders, politicians, and activists in Vermont and around the country. Special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is made possible in part by People's United Bank. Find out what know-how can do. A better business relationship. Fairpoint Communications. Small business owners make it big with Fairpoint. Lake Champlain Transportation. A community leader pioneering new paths in business. And by National Life Insurance. For more than 150 years working for a better tomorrow and over 1,000 VBSR members. Here is noted Vermont author David Goodman.
Welcome to this week's Vermont Conversation. Well, in honor of this beautiful 70 or 80 degree day that we have here, we are going on the Vermont Conversation back to the land, or more specifically, onto the farm. We'll be joined today by two of Vermont's most innovative and pioneering agricultural experts and farmers. The guest in my first half hour is Allison Hooper, founder of Vermont Butter and Cheese Creamery. Allison has been in the business of making goat cheese. Well, let me quote from her website. She writes, "As they say, time flies when you're having fun. A quarter century ago, $2,000 of savings and a $4,000 loan from an ag-minded Vermont church made possible our first nervous debut of fresh Chev in the milk house on the farm in Brookfield. We sold first at farmers markets, then to food co-ops and French chefs. Back then, fresh Chev, so popular today, was a dazzling exotic foreign delicacy for American palates. Today, more than 25 years later, we are humbled. We have won more than 100 national and international awards, including 11 awards, including 4 first place ribbons at the 2012 American Cheese Society competition. Our butters and cheeses populate some of the most prestigious cheese boards in America. But what makes us proudest, perhaps, is that we have sustained a team of family farms and creamery artisans. Together, we thrive making simply great cheese for discerning, appreciative eaters, home cooks, and discriminating chefs alike." Well, with that intro, Allison Hooper, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you, David.
So, Allison, you represent kind of a unique profile of a farmer in Vermont, well, not literally unique, but certainly one that's not commonly replicated. A little of your background, you were just telling me you grew up in New Jersey, you're a 1981 graduate of Connecticut College, dad was a physician, and how did you get into farming?
Well, I think that to call me a farmer over the last 30 years would be a stretch. I've worked on farms. I've lived on farms. I've never actually owned a farm or owned a mortgage on a farm. So I probably don't count the way most Vermont farmers would. But that said, I spent some time in France when I was in college working on some small farmstead cheese operations where we raised and animals, cows, goats, sheep, transformed the milk into cheese and butter, other fresh dairy products, fed whey from cheesemaking to pigs, and made lots of different kinds of specialty pork products. So, you know, this was a very vertically integrated farm and a great experience. And then, of course, I worked on a farm in a larger goat dairy in New Jersey. I'm taking care of the herd, but having wanting to get into this business myself, I wandered up to Vermont where I met Bob Reese, my business partner, and we started the business in 84.
Now, just so that listeners are clear, we're talking here about goat farming, not about cow farming. What's different about raising goats?
Well, it's really important that we note that they are pretty different. One of the things that we like to point out is if a cow is one animal unit, there are 7 goats to one animal unit, and we're probably more conservative and say 6. But, they're small animals. They are ruminants. They're very discriminating. They don't eat tin cans. We don't want to see them tethered to a tree and mowing the lawn. And, the management of these animals is very, specific. And to get milk out of a small animal, maybe 3,000 pounds in a year versus 20,000 pounds out of a cow, it takes a lot of attention. So they are wonderful animals, very smart, very gregarious, and great to be around day in and day out. So
we're talking today on the Vermont Conversation with Allison Hooper, the founder of Vermont Butter and Cheese Creamery. You can join the conversation at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. In our second half hour, you will also be joined by Pete Johnson, the, I guess we could say, iconic founder and owner of Pete's Greens. Back to goat farming with Allison Hooper. You've written that when you got started, that business partner Bob Reese knew just enough about balance sheets to get us started, and that you knew just enough about cheese making to get you into trouble, and that you've had one long seminar at the School of Hard Knocks. Tell me about some of those hard knocks in starting a farming operation or a creamery in Vermont.
Well, yeah. I think, for one thing, if you think back 30 years ago, sure, we had Cabot Co-op, and they were really just getting started building their brand around cheddar. Grafton was making cheddar cheese in southern Vermont, and along comes Bob and Allison thinking we're going to make goat cheese. And, we talked to the bankers, and of course they would say, well, wait a minute, who eats goat cheese and what is that? And we were feeling so naive and confident and really passionate about the product that we gave little or certainly not enough, attention to the fact that we had to educate the market about what this was. And then, of course, they said, well, where are you going to get this milk? And we thought, oh, well, goats are great and great animals. And so we'll cajole farmers into producing milk for us and selling us their milk. So they were all very, innocent ideas about how we were going to start this business. And, of course, if we knew too much more than that, we would have known enough not to start. But,
And why do you say that? I mean,
well,
there's people listening out there.
Well, it's very hard. It was hard. We converted Don Hooper's and Alice Pell's milk house in Brookfield to make cheese. And so they were very generous in allowing us to do that. And so we made a little bit of goat cheese and sold it at a farmer's market in Norwich. At the time, you didn't buy cheese at farmers markets in those days. And today, you might find one or two or three different cheesemakers at a farmers market. So just sensitizing the customers and the marketplace to these types of products was a pretty big job. It was a lot more than just to make the cheese and make it well. We really had to get into the marketplace and do that. And frankly, Vermont was a tough sell. It was, we didn't have a lot of Vermonters eating cheese made out of goat's milk. So we went straight to New York and Boston and sought out French chefs who would know what this is. And
they were basically the only ones who knew what chèvre
at the time. Yeah, I mean, Alice Waters started Chez Panisse in San Francisco and started buying a local goat cheese from Laura Chanel. So there were maybe half a dozen of us around the country who had similar ideas about goat cheese, and we were sort of doing it in the same, very much grassroots, kind of bootstrapping these businesses together.
So you not only had to make great cheese, you had to put it in people's minds that this wasn't weird, this actually tasted amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that really came from, you know, I had, having lived in France and eaten cheese every day and had exposure to wonderful cheese in Europe, really, you know, there really was no reason why this wouldn't catch hold in the U.S. at some point. We were importing cheeses from France at that point, for sure. And, you know, Bob had just finished an MBA, and he was the working in marketing at the Agency of Agriculture. So, you know, I think he really had a desire to get into business for himself, and you know, he applied a lot of financial discipline to what it was we were trying to accomplish. So, you know, I would be making, you know, concocting these cheeses, and he would try to stay one step ahead of me to figure out how are we going to get it all paid for. So,
now, am I correct? You won the Small Business Administration Small Business of the Year. What year was that?
That was in 96.
So what was it that they were recognizing in what you had done?
Well, we, at that point, our business was growing a lot. I think we had had a couple years of 40% growth, which is pretty pretty sharp, given, you know, that we needed working capital to finance inventory and buy milk and so forth. You know, to think that we had started the business, each of us, with $1,200, we were able to put together this $4,000 loan from the United Church of Christ in Randolph. They had a revolving ag loan fund. With that, the Randolph National Bank loaned us $10,000 to install a boiler in the little milk house to pasteurize milk. And there we were, you know, we just sort of, you know, week in and week out, made some cheese, sold it, figured out how to stretch our credit cards and, you know, get it all done. And we grew the business on bank financing. And it's pretty remarkable to think that we were able to do that. I mean, certainly the milk house that we operated out of 30 years ago probably wouldn't pass inspection today, but you know, it worked. So
I'm intrigued by that. A local church having an ag fund to help local farmers get a foothold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it still exist?
I don't think they still have the fund. Yeah.
Now, one of the things that is unusual about you is that there aren't that many women in agriculture. Tell me what have been some of the joys and sorrows you've encountered being a woman in farming.
Well, you know, there weren't that many women in small business, you know, until today. But and there are a lot more women in agriculture today. But yeah, it was a challenge. We were starting this cheese making operation in a very male-dominated world of dairy, not only production dairy, but manufacturing. So, you know, there was, fortunately, you know, having Bob as my partner, it lent a lot of credibility that I may not have gotten if I was on my own, in terms of the industry paying attention to us. And, you know, we just kind of soldiered on. I think that in the early days, the farmers in our valley sort of looked upon what we were doing, thinking, oh, gosh, you know, what a nice girl, you know, she's going to go out of business, you know. And, And we just pushed through. We had loans to pay off. There was no turning back. We just had to make it all work. And I'm proud that you know there are a lot of terrific brands, especially in the food business, that are run by women. And it's not an accident. The artisan cheese industry has been predominantly pioneered by women.
What are special challenges that women face in business? And you mentioned that having a male business partner, Bob Reese, was kind of your cover in the early days, that people wouldn't take you seriously?
No, they wouldn't take us seriously. Hard to take us seriously to make a product that, our industry didn't know. And I think that I can recall many times people would come to the creamery looking for the owner, you know, and I'd say, well, yeah, and they wanted to know if he was there, you know. So it was just a surprise to people. I don't think at that time people were really used to running into a woman as an owner of the business. I think it would be hard for me to comment on that entirely because I did have a business partner, or do have a business partner who's a man. So I'm sure that I didn't experience hardships as a woman business owner that most women would have or do.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation, and my guest this week is Allison Hooper, founder of the Vermont Butter and Cheese Creamery. So, Allison, what would be your advice to, let's say, a young woman interested in starting in farming today in Vermont?
Well, one of the things that we are hoping to accomplish with our new goat dairy, Ayersburg Goat Dairy down in Randolph, is to model a way to finance the purchase of a farm and a farm enterprise.
And tell us a little bit about Ayersburg Dairy, because this is a big deal for
this
you.
This is a big deal for us. We decided a couple years ago that we would become more involved in our milk supply because we weren't able to source all of our goat's milk in Vermont, and ideally it would be great to be able to have all of the milk be produced locally. So to do that...
And just to clarify there, so what you're saying is that now the demand for your products and milk exceeds the supply.
Yes, yeah. So we buy milk from a group of farms in Ontario, and it's a very high-quality milk supply, but, you know, the sustainability of, trucking milk from Ontario doesn't seem that sustainable.
Yeah.
So anyway, we decided to look for a farm. We found the Hodgton farm, the first farm outside of Randolph Village. We bought 110 acres of the farmstead and all of their hay land. And we're in the process of fitting this up to be a goat dairy. And the idea is that the dairy would model humane certified management of goats. We would track all of our inputs for the dairy so that we could demonstrate to interested farmers the finances of a goat dairy, the scale at which, you know, you need to operate, try to answer some of the questions that, you know, farmers have about this type of enterprise, and to grow very good breeding stock for a next generation of farmers. One of the difficulties of starting a goat dairy is sourcing high quality animals to really, you know, make a go of it. And in doing all of that, we have raised some investment capital from individuals to develop this farm. And our hope is that we can match investors with farmers and try to put a package together so that a wannabe farmer could get started in farming and either buy out the investor or buy the farm from the investor over time. I think that there are advantages to both for both parties. It hasn't been well developed as an investment model, and so for us, whether you want to become a goat farmer or a vegetable farmer, or you know, raise pigs or you know, steers, whatever it is, we're hoping that we can flesh that out a bit.
So you're really hoping to be a model farm for people to come in, almost a laboratory for farming in Vermont?
A little bit, yeah. It's a fairly audacious idea, you know. And it is a different model from different from cow dairy. So, you know, we haven't really fully figured out how to do it really well. I think our farmers, we have all different kinds of farmers who ship milk to us. There are some that milk as few as 40 goats, and it's not obviously not a full-time job. And then we have some milk 400, and, you know, they do other things with the milk. They make yogurt or bottle milk. And so I think that we have never been able to claim that, yes, with 500 milking does, you can earn a living doing this on a, you know, your piece of land. So we thought, well, who better than us to risk it and try to make it work?
Now, one of the, to me, notable things about what you do is that you have, for almost 30 years, had the same business partner, Bob mm-hmm. Reese. And whether it's a life partner or a business partner, we all know that it takes work to maintain and sustain a good working partnership. What's the secret, as you've learned, of making a partnership like that work?
Well, Bob and I have very different skills that we bring to the table, and we do different things in the business. I would say that both of us have never been huge risk takers. I mean, sure, we took some risk early on just to start the business, but you got to remember that we didn't have anything, so you tend to take a lot more risk early on than you do when you're 30 years in. You know, I think that, you know, Bob really is, he runs the day-to-day business. He runs the operations. Actually, we have a very good staff who runs the operations now, and the two of us are able to sort of do some of the other things that we enjoy doing. I'm kind of the person who's out in the marketplace, sort of the face of the business. You know, we really complement each other very, very well.
You have been very involved in the sustainable and socially responsible business movement. What does it mean in your work to have a triple bottom line of people, planet, and profits?
You know, I think that inside the business, if you can... Well, let me say it this way. You have to start with a vision of where you think your business what's it going to look like in 5 years or 10 years? And you have to sort of imagine something pretty audacious, but doable, you know, not ridiculous. And I think that one of the things that Bob and I have done well over the years is to really nurture our staff. One of the idiosyncrasies of artisan cheesemaking is you don't really dial up, you know, your staff. You've got to develop them from within and teach as you go, and we teach ourselves. And so that has really, you know, allowed us to make those investments in the company that are paying us back now. I mean, people are very vested in what we do. They're very proud of what they do. And so with each time you achieve something like that, you go on to the next thing. So, you know, I think...
We'll hold that thought and come back after the news. We're talking with Vermont Butter and Cheese founder Allison Hooper, and the Vermont Conversation will be right back.
AP Update. I'm Rita Foley. Officials are now beginning to get a handle on the terrible cost in lives and property damage from the tornado that battered Oklahoma. Our Warren Levinson is in hard-hit Moore, Oklahoma.
The state medical examiner says 10 children were among the 24 known victims of Monday's tornado. The toll includes two infants, a 4-month-old and a 7-month-old. Both died of head injuries. The other 8 children to die in the storm ranged in age from 4 to 9. Most of them, the medical examiner says, died of suffocation. 7 of the children who died were pupils at Park Towers Elementary School, which was demolished by the tornado. Official property damage estimates are still some time away, but the state insurance commissioner says the bill seems likely to top the $2 billion a massive tornado in Joplin, Missouri cost 2 years ago. Warren Levinson, Moore, Oklahoma.
And we're now hearing from a source that President Obama will visit Moore on Sunday. Moore has 41,000 people in it. It's about 10 miles from Oklahoma City. I'm Rita Foley.
The next time you open up your wallet, take a closer look. Ask yourself, does your money have values? At the Vermont Community Loan Fund, we believe that money can have value and values. At the Vermont Community Loan Fund, we value Vermont. We make loans that put Vermonters back to work, supporting local businesses, farms, and food. Our loans build homes and support organizations that provide essential services like childcare. When you invest with the Vermont Community Loan Fund, you're investing in Vermont. You decide how much to invest, how long to invest, and the interest rate you'll earn. For 25 years, we've helped Vermont families, businesses, foundations, faith-based groups, and other folks like you invest in Vermont for Vermont. That's money with value and values. The Vermont Community Loan Fund, putting your money to work for you and for Vermont. Learn more at investinvermont.org. That's investinvermont.org.
Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is pleased to make the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman available, along with Lake Champlain Transportation, a community leader pioneering new paths in business. People's United Bank, find out what know-how can do. A better business relationship. National Life Insurance, for more than 150 years, working for a better tomorrow. Fairpoint Communications, small business owners make it big with Fairpoint, and the over 1,000 VBSR members.
Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. We've been talking this week. We've been going out to the land and onto the farm, and we've been talking in our first half hour with Allison Hooper, the founder of Vermont Butter and Cheese Creamery. And in our second half hour here, we're going to be joined in the conversation by Pete Johnson, the founder and owner of Pete's Greens in Craftsbury. Pete, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks for taking time out of your day. What have you been picking today?
Oh, we're picking all kinds of greens, chard and kale and salad turnips and cucumbers and basil. And I just had 1,000 baby chicks show up, so I was running around trying to get them set up. And It's full-on spring here.
Wow. Well, you know, unlike just about any other profession I can think of, except for maybe, you know, a surgeon, I always feel bad when I interrupt the work of a farmer because I know how busy you are, and I also know that there are consequences for interrupting the constant work that you do there. So, Pete, you've been working hard in a corner of this state that often doesn't get a lot of spotlight, but recently you did get some attention. You are this year's Small Business Administration Business of the Year. So first, congratulations.
Thanks.
And has the award ceremony already happened for that?
No, it's in June. I think it's June 13th at Shelburne Farms.
So tell me, and we also have on the line here your colleague, Allison Hooper from Vermont Butter and Cheese, a former SBA Business Person of the Year, and she'll join us a little in the conversation in a little bit. But what earned you this really big honor?
I don't really know. There was quite a bit in the application about you get nominated and then you fill in a pretty extensive application. There was quite a bit about overcoming adversity, and obviously we had a good story for that in our fire. And I don't really know. I haven't talked to them about it, and it was a pretty big surprise for us. And I was really pleased and excited that they chose to recognize a farm and a, you know, relatively small and kind of new economy type farm. I thought that was really impressive and shows how far this whole industry has come in the last 10, 15 years in Vermont. And to me, that's really exciting. I'm glad that we're building a real economy with all this local food, real jobs, good-paying jobs, real careers for people. That's been a goal of mine from the start. So it's cool that the SBA is also recognizing that.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that this award, you know, the competition is fierce, and you have every kind of business. I think last year's winner in Vermont was Draker Labs and Chach Curtis, their director. It's a solar company, but I mean, it just gives a sense of, you know, they're not just going around handing this out to farmers. You were up against, you know, big companies with, this is clearly, you know, you're doing notable things. So one of them that you just alluded to was recovering from disaster. And for those who don't know the story, tell us about the disaster at Pete's Green.
2 years ago on January 12th, we had a fire that burned our whole barn, which was our storage of our produce, our wash house. A lot of our supplies were stored there. We had a huge freezer full of meat and frozen produce. It all went up in flames, and it was not as much the terrible traumatic experience as some might assume. We got a great staff that works here and has a lot of them been here for years. And within about a day, we were kind of gathered around and made a plan or started to make a plan. And our new building was built by this guy named Isaac Jacobs, who's worked here for years and used to be a builder, and now he's a farmer and is capable enough to pull off a huge commercial construction project. And we built our new building quickly, but it turned out to be probably the best way to do it. All of our subcontractors and engineers and people like that were really in tune and on board with our timeline. And, you know, in a project like this, that makes a huge difference. So I've often commented to Isaac that if we ever build something big again, we'll probably look back at the time where we had to do it really fast as the much easier version. Just because we had a definite timeline that we had to meet. And we ended up with a building that's really functional and really useful for what we do now and what we'll be doing over the next years. So, and we wouldn't change a lot about it. It really, really turned out well.
And you got a lot of help in raising money to build this barn because insurance didn't cover it all, right?
Yeah, we were poorly insured. I'd been kind of a seat-of-my-pants businessman my whole time, more focused on growing stuff and selling it than, you know, making sure everything in the office was in perfect order. And one place where we really were short was insurance. We aren't anymore. We're insured to the hilt now. And that was pretty scary, that first morning of the fire, to go in and look up the policy and try to, I sort of was trying to remember what it was before I looked it up, but it wasn't great. Our insurance company was great. We're insured with Farm Family Insurance, and they were really generous to us and did all they could. We just hadn't bought enough of it. So we got all kinds of help from the community near and far in a way that was completely overwhelming and really surprising. I didn't realize nearly the extent of the people that we touched or affected around the state and even beyond. So it was amazing, but also hard to be at the receiving end of all that generosity.
Well, where you say you're getting help from near and far, give us an idea of some of the more surprising types of help that you received.
Well, the little church here in Craftsbury held a little fundraising dinner, and there was $5,000 in the pot at the end of the night, and this was like crumpled $20 bills and stuff like that, and I was just blown away. The sort of the big flagship one was Bid for the Barn, which is run by Robin McDermott and Nancy Barron in the Waitsfield area. Nancy used to work for us, and Robin's a longtime friend, and they thought they were going to put together this little donation bid thing that might raise $10,000 or $15,000 and take them a couple days' work, and it just mushroomed into this huge thing, and all kinds of businesses from all around the state donated goods, and people bid on them, and it raised $60,000, and was just a pretty incredible thing. Robin and Nancy are really impressive organizers, did a great job on it. But then there were probably 25 or 30 other fundraisers of various sorts all around the state, and then just a ton of private donations. I signed a thank you card to everybody who donated, and it took me days and days and days to sign all the cards. It was really just an amazing thing, and as someone who's sort of prided himself on being self-reliant and independent and able to take care of himself, it was also, it was super touching and also challenging. But we really needed the money, and it really helped get us going again. We would have had a much harder time without it.
So you, all told, how much did you raise in this process?
$160,000 came in, and the nice thing about it was a lot of it was really quick. We needed some money right off the bat, and a lot of these donations came in really fast and just helped us with just like cleanup from the fire and things like that.
And this became the basis of the Vermont Farm Fund. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so probably about March, that middle of March after the fire, after a while, we had to cut off the proposed fundraisers. It just was going on and on and on, and we just said, okay, that's awesome, everybody, but we got enough money. We're fine now. But we saw that there was a desire out there to contribute and to help farms. And so decided that over time we'd pay back this money or pay forward this money to the Vermont Farm Fund. And this was organized in cooperation with the Center for Ag Economy in Hardwick, who's been a real key partner in this whole thing. And the Farm Fund's a partnership between the Center for Ag Economy and Pete's Greens. And we have a 5-member board, and we were kind of slowly getting ourselves organized, and then Irene struck, and we saw that, immediately there was a whole bunch of need, way more need than we had had. And this is only like 8 months later. So we got the Farm Fund going right away, and we put in $40,000 into it, and within just a few days there was another $50,000 from other donations, and we made 10 or 12 or 13 loans, mostly to vegetable farms that had been flooded pretty quickly, within a few weeks. I think we were the first entity to get, money out to people damaged by Irene. And it was a good start for us. It was a good jump start for the whole project. And since then, we've also started the innovative side of the loan fund. So now we have an emergency side and an innovation side. And so we're still making emergency loans for people who have disasters of various types. But we're also really keen on making loans to farms or other food-based businesses that have an idea for increasing the diversity of local food produced in Vermont. And it's really fun. We're getting some really interesting proposals, and it's just a great thing to be part of, really.
And how much is in the farm fund now?
I think we're at about $160,000 to $170,000. The Water Wheel Foundation, which is a charitable arm of Fish, the band, donated $50,000. And there's sort of a constant trickle of donations into it. Pete's Greens continues to put in. We're putting about $20,000 a year back into it, $20,000 to $30,000. And it recently, the Farm Fund was kind of stable and not super active. And just in the last 3 months or so, the same Nancy Barron and Robin McDermott stepped back in and built a website and started a whole bunch of new publicity, telling the stories of a lot of these farms that have borrowed money from the Farm Fund, and really breathed some awesome new life into it. And it's really going to be a much more powerful, active loan fund going forward. I'm really excited about it. Those two they just have a lot of energy and they do a lot of good work, and they've sort of adopted the Farm Fund as their current pet project. So we're hoping to get significant more funds into it relatively quickly, because now we have, for a long time, we had just about the right number of potential borrowers as the amount of money we had, and now we have more borrowers than we have money, which is a good position to be in, but we need to raise some more money. So,
well, this is a good opportunity to say, have you tell us, what's the website address of the Vermont Farm Fund?
Oh, you're asking the tough questions now. I'm guessing if you just Google Vermont Farm Fund, it'll pop right up.
Yeah, okay, that's always reliable.
Yeah.
We're talking on the Vermont Conversation today with Pete Johnson from Pete's Greens. We've also have on the line Allison Hooper from Vermont Butter and Cheese. And Pete, the story is it's remarkable, really, and very touching, this idea of how people came literally down from the mountains to lend a hand or lend money. And to me, it speaks of, you know, not only a shared vision that you have inspired, but just also a lot of love that people have and appreciation for what you do on the land.
Well, I mean, think about this, too. We're in Vermont, and we saw after Irene what an incredible place we live in, and we are basically a big town or a big city, and we really care about each other and take care of each other, and I'm so pleased to live here and do the work I do in this state because of that sense of duty and connectedness and helpfulness and really caring about each other. And the other really neat thing about Vermont is it's pretty easy to get a story out. You know, it's not so hard for most people in the state to learn about something. And as the world gets bigger and crazier and more corporate, it's just more and more fun to live in a place that has these sort of ethics. And I'm just really, really proud and happy to be located here. I wasn't born or raised here, so it's kind of ended up here by chance, and really, really happy to have.
Well, and this kind of goes back to your story, which is that the farm originally began selling kind of high-end produce to Boston and New York restaurants, and you basically got out of that business, or mostly did, and decided to sell locally. Why'd you do that?
Well, initially we sold entirely locally for the first 3 or 4 years, and it was just greens, hence the name. And then we had a really good opportunity with an outfit called Vermont Quality Meats, who was hauling lots of great meat to mostly Boston, nice restaurants in Boston, and they wanted to carry produce too. So we ended up shipping a lot of produce through them. And this was sort of early 2000s, and the big city restaurant world was very focused on baby things and really fancy and everything being perfectly sized and a lot of exotic varieties. And we just kind of jumped right into that. And it was really fun for a while to be pushed by these chefs to have really high quality standards and to be pushed to grow all kinds of interesting things. And then by about 2004, 2005, it seemed like things were tightening up for them, and the interest was not quite the same in those high-end things, and they weren't able to pay so fairly for them. And they still kind of wanted them, but they didn't want to pay quite what was needed for them, and it just got to be less fun. So right about then, we saw that Vermont, this whole locavore term was really taking off here, and we'd been selling in Vermont the whole time, but we decided to really focus on Vermont in a big way, and it was great. It's really been gratifying and an interesting transition to have gone through for the farm. And the amount of local food consumed in Vermont per capita, I don't know how it compares to other places, but, you know, there's not a lot of people living here, but there's a lot of great food eaten here and a lot of support to a lot of food-producing companies. And it's been really fun to be part of that.
Well, let me bring Allison Hooper from Vermont Butter and Cheese into the conversation. Allison, your business has Vermont in its name. What does that mean to you, and what does it mean to the people who buy your cheeses?
Well, certainly, my theory about Vermont products is that they're not great because they come from Vermont. They're great because here we have to do things a little bit better and a little smarter, because we, you know, if we're small and we need to compete in a larger marketplace, we may have our cost of goods may be higher, our feed costs are higher, so we have to make something of very high quality and value to be able to sell that in the marketplace. So I think it's not an accident that Vermont products are really great. And, you know, all over the country, consumers have a very warm feeling about Vermont. It evokes something, something good. So, yeah.
And it's a question for both of you. What is the whole GMO issue, which has been very hot, especially this legislative season? What does it mean, Allison, to you that your products be known to be, you know, GMO-free, organic, or whatever way that you build them?
Well, certainly our target customer asks those questions. They want to know what the animals eat. They want to know everything about us and what we do and how we do it. And where I get, frankly, conflicted on the GMO issue in Vermont is we buy milk from animals that eat grain, and if it's not organic, you really can't say that it's GMO free. And you know, corn is grown here with GMO corn, and so it's a matter of sort of where do you draw the line. You know, we're not taking a package of GMOs and adding them to our milk and stirring it into our cheese, but I think that we need to be, you know, if it's the effort to be transparent, it may actually create more confusion than not. So.
I can see how it's complicated for animal, you know. Pete, what is the whole GMO and organic, GMO-free or organic label mean for you, and why you do it?
Well, in the vegetable world, they're very different things. You know, we're certified organic, and that means that we don't use synthetic pesticides or fertilizers. There currently is not much going on GMO-wise in the vegetable world. A lot of the field corn that is grown, as Allison alluded to, is GMO, so there's potential to contaminate sweet corn with it if it's grown too close. Now there's a big deal with sugar beets out west, being GMO sugar beets being grown in the same area where they're growing table beet seed, and real potential to contaminate them. But when I open up a seed catalog, I'm not offered GMO varieties to grow on my farm currently. That could change over time. But we're very aware and up on the issues, and I find it really interesting that, you know, GMOs have been out there now for, it seems like it's about 15 years ago that really kind of came online, and there was a lot of activity and effort and news about them, and then it felt like it kind of went away, more or less, for about 10 years, and then now recently in the last couple of years, it's really back front and center in a lot of ways, and that's surprising to me. I find that usually the American public kind of forgets about things and they're done with them forever, and but this one seems to be sticking around, and we're pretty pleased to see the Whole Foods, is the supermarket chain, is planning to try to be GMO-free within a few years, and they're planning major growth and could become a big enough entity to really affect change in businesses far beyond theirs. So we were disappointed the law did not pass in California last year, because California is also a big enough place that could have really had national effects. But it seems like the energy and pressure is there, and over time, changes could be coming down the line.
Well, Pete, let me give you the last word here. What is your vision for farming in Vermont?
My vision is that we're just getting going, and that I'm sitting out here in Craftsbury down in the Black River Valley looking out my window at all these hills surrounding me. And these hills used to be covered in small farms. And there's many farms near me that now support one family on hundreds and hundreds of acres that used to support dozens of families. And there's some couple cool things about having more people and more interesting, diverse operations around here. One of the cool things is culturally, it brings a whole lot more people involved in agriculture to the area. And we're starting, especially in the Hardwick area, we're really starting to feel like this rural culture and this agricultural, entrepreneurial culture is really coming back, and it's so stimulating and exciting and fun to be around, and still I think we have just a small fraction of where we're headed. So I want to see more and more farms, more and more operations, more and more people, more families being raised, more kids being raised in this lifestyle. And the great thing about Vermont is that there are people who are growing up here and people who want to move here and do this work. And the land's out there. The land's not that easy to get your hands on, but there is a lot of land and it's relatively fertile. And we're pretty tapped into markets. You know, we're not at all far from some of the best markets in the world, and lots of people who are well off and can afford good food. So a lot of things are lining up to really keep this momentum cranking over the next 20, 50 years. And I think we really have a state government now that's really in tune with it as well. And so we're excited and feel like it's... the last 15, 20 years have been just the start, and there's a lot more coming down. For example, there's some local guys here who are interested in starting a goat dairy to make milk for Allison. And they grew up on a cow dairy farm not too far from here, and that farm got sold in the last 7, 8 years, but they're interested in starting a new venture. So those kind of opportunities are exciting, and there are more every day. It's just like incredible what's mushrooming around the state.
Okay, well, Pete, I'm gonna conclude it there, and I want to thank you, Pete Johnson from Pete's Greens, or petesgreens.com, and Allison Hooper, founder of Vermont Butter and Cheese. You can learn more about her operation at vermontcreamery.com. Thanks both for taking us out to the farm today on the Vermont Conversation. We're going to finish our show with just a minute about Vermontivate, and we have on the line Catherine Bloom from Vermontivate. Catherine, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Well, thank you. So glad to be here.
Well, I knew we're cutting you short a little, but I also knew that if there's anybody in the state who can make their pitch quickly, it's you. So tell us about Vermontivate, where it's at, and where people can learn more.
Okay, Vermontivate is a community sustainability game that's all about bringing a sense of fun, hope, possibility, and collaboration to addressing the climate crisis. Information can be found at our website, which is vermontivate.com. That's Vermont with an I-V-A-T-E on the end, like motivate, captivate, or salivate. And basically what we're trying to get people to do is engage in a broad range of sustainable living behaviors, everything from food to transportation to efficiency to addressing solid waste. It's a game which can encompass a broad range of ages and experience levels. People get points, which go to their town, and at the end of the game, the winning town gets an ice cream party from Ben and Jerry's.
Okay, well, you have just won the prize for giving the pitch in the shortest, fastest, most energetic time.
I knew it'd be the elevator pitch sooner or later.
Well, thank you, and we'll encourage listeners to go to vermontivate.com to learn how they can compete, and that'll do it for this week's Vermont Conversation. Thanks for listening.
And you are listening to the stations of Radio Vermont as we head along toward the top of the hour. A reminder that you are listening to locally owned and operated 96.1 WDEV FM in Warren, FM 96.5 Barrie, AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier, and serving the kingdom on FM 101.9 from Island Pond. It's 2 o'clock.
AP Radio News.